We've been preaching through the core values of our church. Good time for us as we've come together in our new place to go back and sort of review what we're doing and why we're doing it. Again, if you're curious about checking up on those, you can find them on our web under our identity, and the core values are there. I haven't taken them in particular order, just sort of made up a list that I was going to follow, and we've done two already, and this is our third one this morning that just happens to fall today. I want to let you know that it's always an honor to speak on leadership, because I feel truly honored to be a leader in our church here at Midtown. It's a privilege, and it's one that constantly I'm reminded that it's not about the building, it's not about the facilities or the technology, it really is about the people, and I have so much enjoyed you, and you make this worthwhile and enjoyable, and I'm very grateful for that. I might be one of the most visible and vocal leaders here, but I'm certainly not the only one. And as we go through it this morning, especially those of us as pastors, Pastor Lloyd, Pastor Dave, and myself, we recognize that there's far more to this subject than just something that is said about pastors themselves. Our core value states that we believe that our church should be led by those with leadership gifts, and that the church structure should be according to the nature and the giftedness of the church body. In other words, one of the things that we have done over the years is that there's a fluidity to our structure. When you have more leaders and more things that need to be represented, your leadership structure grows. When there's less, it shrinks. When there are more groups that spring up, then you're going to automatically have more people that have a voice, and you want to always make sure that those people are honored and valued, and that they have an ability to have a voice in the areas that they enjoy. It would be true to say that we've adopted a leadership structure that has leaders lead. We're not a congregation-led church. People ask me about that distinction sometimes. And that doesn't mean the congregation doesn't have a voice. It doesn't mean we don't vote. We have meetings where it's very important that the congregation has a say on things. But in the normal flow of week to week, Sunday to Sunday, we let leaders lead. We let them do what God has called them to do. Then when there are decisions that need to be made together, then we call the church together and we make those decisions. Our elders or pastors, and we use that term interchangeably because of our Baptist heritage, because we don't believe that it's about whether you're paid or not, all right? So it's not about being paid. So at times we have had unpaid pastors or elders. We've also had paid ones, all right? But the distinction of whether you're an elder or a pastor, that is a term that we've not chosen to separate. In other words, we've not chosen to say some people are pastors and some people are elders. We've used the term interchangeably. I realize that in other churches, they have created a separate group out of both of those. We've simply always chosen to put them together. And so when there is someone with eldership gifts, that person is invited to be on the pastor's board, which is our elders' board, and vice versa. All the deacons and leaders of ministry and all the workers in our ministry team serve and lead according to the passion and gifts that God has given them. We think that's very important. We don't want people to be forced to do something they don't want to do. And at times, I know in a church, you feel like maybe you got conscripted into something. We hope that if that feeling doesn't go away, that you step away from that, all right? We do want people to feel that they're doing something that they enjoy, where they can contribute, and that it gives them great pleasure to recognize that that's one of the ways in which they can serve. Where do elders get the authority to lead from? That's always very interesting. One would be from God's word itself. And so we make every effort to rule, which is the biblical word for oversee, that in our oversight we honor God and that we lead the church in and according to the principles that we see in the Word of God. But it also comes from you, the people. It's voluntary. So for those that are paid pastors, you hire us, you can fire us. As a church member, you empower me to have the authority to lead you. And that way I can't lord it over you and say, do it or else. That'd be a terrible thing for me to say, because then you'd probably choose the else. And you can't say to me, please me in everything, or I won't financially support the church or serve you. Right? So that's the mutual benefit of having that kind of voluntary submission. We voluntarily submit to the structure that we ultimately live in. And it takes an enormous amount of goodwill for churches to live in unity within their leadership structures. It simply does. I found there's a lot of goodwill towards me. I'm sure Dave would say the same thing. Lloyd would say the same thing. The leaders of ministries would say that. There's a lot of goodwill that comes their way, and we hope that we give that back to you as well. And I want to talk to you a little bit this morning about what God expects from those in leadership positions here at Midtown Church. And when we talk about these leadership positions, we're talking about the normal things that you would think about. Elder, deacon, positions in children's ministry, workers, youth, those who lead and do things within our Bible study groups or in anything else that's taking place in or outside the church. Now, not everyone is given a gift of leadership. We recognize that as well, and that's okay. We recognize that a lot of you have said, I don't necessarily want to lead, but whatever you need, I'm there. And that's what makes a church work. And so that is how God has called us to all minister in different ways. And if leadership isn't your gift, you'll still want to pay attention today, because you can use what I'm going to say against me. Right? You do want to know what to expect from leaders, right? But don't just exclude this morning's sermon because you say, well, I'm not really looking to ever be a leader. I think it's important for us all to have an understanding of what goes on within our leaders and our leadership. So again, we believe that churches should be led by those with leadership gifts, that the church structure should be according to the nature and giftedness of the church body. Later on, I will focus a little bit more on spiritual giftedness. Let's not worry about that this morning. That's another sermon. That's not going to be our focal point. There are seven essential vows, I've called them, things that we promise, that we ask leaders to promise when they serve in our church. And these are things that keep us healthy. They're things that keep us engaged. They're things that keep us honest. They're things that keep us accountable. And so I want to talk about these non-negotiables in church leadership. And the phrase is that we'll make every effort. When you consider the use of that phrase in the New Testament, I think that's what we're looking for. We're not looking for perfect people, because there aren't any. And for me to pretend that I'm better than anyone is a gross fallacy and a complete and absolute lie. So we are here together to make every effort, right? That's what God has called us to do. And these are the qualities that I think will increase our effectiveness as leaders. Number one, leaders of Midtown Church, if you see that MTC, that's simply what that stands for. We want to always make sure that we're focusing on integrity. 2 Peter 3:14 says, make every effort to be found spotless, blameless, and at peace with him. And there's that phrasing again, make every effort. It's not if you are a blameless, spotless, blameless person, then apply for leadership. That's not how that verse is written, all right? But it does ask us to make an effort. You can't not care about this, right? Your attitude can't be, take me as I am, no matter what. I'm not going to be make much of an effort because you know what? God made me this way. And you've heard people talk about that sometime. And that's one of the destructive qualities that happens within the whole structure of social science, where it all becomes about what I am and how I feel I want to be. And change is never something that enters into the equation because you're not allowed to expect yourself to change or someone else to change. I am what I am. That's how it stays, period. No exceptions. So we're not looking for that person. Are you that person? Do you shine your halo this morning when you got out of bed? Do you take it off the bedpost? Give it a nice shine before you put it on? No. That's not what we're talking about, and we certainly are not expecting that. But we are expecting transparency. Transparency is quite different, isn't it? Transparency is about saying, this is what I do, and this is where I have it together, but I'm also honest enough to say there are other areas of my life that I do not have it together. Integrity means you try your best to walk the walk, but you're ready to offer an apology and forgiveness every time you mess up. Transparency is the way God expects us to live. Secondly, as a leader here, we forgive those who hurt us. Hebrews 12, 14, and 15 says, make every effort to live in peace with all men. See to it that no one misses the grace of God and that no bitter root grows up. There's a lot of times that this particular thing takes people out of ministry. Just last week again, I did have the opportunity to hear of a fellow pastor who is leaving the ministry. And in his words, I just can't take it anymore. There comes a point where sometimes you're overwhelmed and there's so much bitterness and anger that you can't continue. Pastors are no different than other people. There are times when they just can't do it anymore. And so we're hoping that this person, with a little bit of rest, some counseling, that ultimately we can restore this person to ministry down the road. But it happens. And bitterness is a big one. You're going to be hurt in ministry no matter what level of leadership you're going to be called to. It's just a given. There's just going to be disagreements where you don't see eye to eye. And somebody's going to make some sort of an accusation or some sort of a statement. And it is true, as leaders, you have to grow a little bit of a thick skin. If you're too thin-skinned, you're not going to be able to sleep at night anymore. And you're just not going to do well. You got to be willing to take some shots. Somebody said, the pioneers always get the arrows. It's probably not a PC thing to say anymore, right? We understand what they're saying. When you're out in front, it's easy to get shot. And one of the most deadly for diseases for leaders then is bitterness. And it's a constant danger. Because if you allow bitterness in any area of your life, it chokes out your heart for love. That's just what happens. It'll choke your spirituality and your love for people. And ultimately, you just find your heart shriveling. It's the Grinch kind of a thing. You just don't have the capacity to love that you used to have. And often when that happens, It's because there's a tremendous root of bitterness somewhere. As a leader, you also got to relax and trust God. There's an amusing story in Life's Like That in Reader's Digest where a young mom hears her 7-year-old screaming blue murder. She goes into the bedroom and she finds the 2-year-old sister is on the floor with the little boy, and the 2-year-old sister has got him by the hair and is pulling for all she's worth and simply won't let go. So of course the mom gets down there, extracts the hair out of the 2-year-old, and says to the 7-year-old, "You got to understand, I'm sorry that it hurt. Honey, she just doesn't mean it. She doesn't understand. She's just 2 years old, and sorry about that." She goes back out of the room, and there's another blood-curdling scream, this time from the 2-year-old. When she runs back in, now it's the 7-year-old who says, "Now she does." Ministry is not always as glamorous as some people may think. You hear things, you see things that are not necessarily pleasant. And you always find that things don't necessarily go as smoothly as you like. But what we need to have an ability to do is enter God's rest, to find a place where we can rest in God and not let all the stuff that's not working right eat away at us. That's true because of our human natures. We sometimes feel like little Jack, right? Strong desire to show you. And that has to be kept under check at all times, right? It's not my desire to look for or find revenge. It's not up to me to figure out how to deal hurt back. That is not what ministry and what leadership is about. And so Hebrews says we have to enter God's rest, who also rested from his own work. Let us therefore make every effort, there it is again, make every effort to enter into God's rest. He's talking about this thing we could call relaxed concern. Relaxed concern. You know, if you're going to be in a leadership position, you got to learn relaxed concern. What is that? It means that you have to understand that all of us have needs as people, but none of us are God. And that's hard. What I mean by that is when you hear someone has a need, you want to solve it. You want to take care of it. You want to change it. You want to fix it. And if in every situation you are thwarted from fixing stuff, it can eat away at you. And ultimately, you either become someone who doesn't care anymore, right? Or you become someone who blames to such an extent that you're no fun to be around. Relaxed concern. That's what you need. And people in leadership need a break. They need holidays. They need vacation time. They need time away. They need to do stuff differently. Cannot bear to bear everybody's burden all the time. You can't. And we have to be able to take care of ourselves as well. What are some of the ways that we can relax and trust God more? Certainly, prayer helps. It helps a lot. It helps to be able to, in prayer, say, "God, I am frustrated, I'm upset, I'm angry, and I'm just going to throw this on you. You're God. You deal with it." And the ability to leave that there and not keep picking it up every hour and then having to do it again. I mean, if you do it again. But it is a real human thing to keep making these things our problem and trying to fix people. Fix people, helping people is a God thing that he involves us in, but we also have to know when to step back, when we cannot do any more. Giving other people responsibility is a big help. And man, you have been a fabulous church for this. I can't Think how many times you've come to us and said, what can we do to take something off your plate? How can we share in the responsibility? And that's a huge one for simply relaxing and trusting God, because when somebody comes to us like that, we say, God's at work. That's what blesses leaders. Leaders go back and they tell the stories to each other. I was, you know, really frustrated and blah, 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 this and that. And you'll never believe it. I got a phone call and somebody said, and they share that. Leaders do that. They share those things together. Those are God moments for leaders. That God has put that on somebody else's heart, on somebody else's mind, that they're there to help. God has richly provided us with all things for our enjoyment. We've got to be careful that we don't assume the attitude that there's no enjoyment here on earth. It's all coming in heaven. Sometimes people talk like that, you know. Life is drudgery and misery and frustration and it's all awful. But one day we're going to get to heaven and all our trials and labors will be over and then it'll just be party. The last part may be fairly true. I'm expecting a good party in heaven when I get there. I'm expecting my share of work though as well. You've got your eschatology wrong if you think that God has called us to endless partying in heaven. All right? But there is going to be a good party, and it's going to be great, and there are going to be so many fantastic things to look forward to when we're all together. All the generations from all the eons of Earth's history working together to praise God and to fulfill His plan. It's going to be great. But this verse reminds us that it's okay to enjoy things here. That's hard to do some days. It's hard to remember. But God wants us also to have enjoyment now. People sometimes ask me, and they ask other leaders, do you ever get tired of ministry? I used to say nope. You have a regular maintenance schedule. I have to admit, these last 3.5 years, I'm probably more inclined to say yes. But you have to understand what I mean by that. Won't go there yet. When I do say that, the honest truth is I don't get tired in the ministry, or I do get tired in ministry. I don't get tired of ministry is probably the better way to say it. Many of you know my experience. I did burn out once. I did have a burnout experience early on, first 7 years that I was in Hope, and I left the ministry. And that taught me some really valuable lessons about how to safeguard myself from burnout. And it's not just physical tiredness, right? When you get so exasperated and angry and tense inside and you can't find any way to express that, that's usually a huge sign for burnout, where literally that overtakes you. So it's not that you get tired of ministry. I think once God had confirmed in my life that I always wanted to do this and I found joy in that ever since, I'm not tired of ministry, but I do get tired in ministry. That's just the reality of it. I'm no better than anybody else. So we do try and learn to relax in God. We also want to be an encourager. Romans 14:19, let us make every effort to do what leads to peace and to mutual edification, to build people up. The point is to build people up, especially when we're always together, than tearing them down. If you want to be a encourager, not a discourager. And because of that, one of the things, especially at the moment where we do so few things together, mostly it's a Sunday morning service, 80% of you are going to have your only experience with other believers jointly like this here on a Sunday morning. So you want to be careful about what you talk to others about on a Sunday morning. Right? You got to ask yourself, am I going to take those precious moments once a week to be critical or controversial or accusatory? Can it wait? I'm not saying that some of those topics don't need a good coffee round, but they probably need a coffee round at Timmy's or in your own kitchen or somewhere else. Do you see what I mean? Rather than here. Because I think we are called, especially in times like this, to figure out how to be a little more positive. Because there's a lot of negativity that you're going to encounter from Monday to Saturday. And it's one of the ways that we can do to try and build each other up, being sensitive to people's needs, to share responsibility. People respond to responsibility, and they enjoy being asked to do things and trusted to do the things that they do. And thirdly, of course, listening to people, because listening does include loving. It says, I'm paying attention to you, and I value what you have to say. And very often when those subjects are hurtful or when they are personal, there is a better time to do it than standing in a crowd and trying to sort it out then. Being optimistic about people's potential is important. One of the great things that we've always said here is that we do what we do as a church because of the people that God brings to us. In other words, you can't do what you don't have the people to do it with. But you can do things that God has brought people here with certain gifts and skills and abilities. And once you recognize those, once they share those, once they admit to those kinds of things, you try and figure out a way to incorporate them into what you're doing as a group, as a people. We're called to be peacemakers. Make every effort to keep the unity of the Spirit through the bond of peace. One of the things that we are called to do as leaders is to reduce conflict. There's a tremendous amount of conflict. Just think of some of the conflict that you've experienced in the last week. Whether it's personal, whether it's with the person who's sitting right next to you, right? Whether it's online, whether it's with family, whether it's friends, whether it's as you engage with the news, there is a tremendous amount of conflict that gets bombarded at us. And one of the things that we ask leaders to do is make every effort to reduce conflict, because we're in a society and in a world that is absolutely filled with conflict. Jesus said, "Blessed are the peacemakers." So how can I be a peacemaker if I'm going to take my leadership at a church seriously as well? And part of that is to tolerate different ministries and the people that are attracted to those ministries. To recognize that people have different personalities and they can still all contribute to ministry. We want to value individuals with all their gifts and respect diversity because we want unity, not uniformity. There's a difference between the two. And so we want to respect people and appreciate the people that God has created. Never stop growing. It is important to not feel like you've arrived. That's one of the great joys, I think, of being a grandparent at the moment. I learned, and I've talked at other times, how you have disagreements with your kids because they're doing things differently, naturally. But we've learned a lot being grandparents now of the way that our children have chosen to do things that we didn't think of, things that are more engaging than perhaps we were. And it's fascinating to listen to their reasoning and watch their lives and have very interesting conversations on how they do things differently than we do. It's no different in a church. Make every effort to add to your faith goodness, to goodness knowledge, to knowledge self-control, to self-control perseverance, and to perseverance, add godliness, to godliness, brotherly kindness, to brotherly kindness, love. And if you possess these qualities in increasing measure, they will keep you from being ineffective and unproductive. Man, that's three sermons right there. Because wherever you throw yourself on the scale, if you say, I'm a good person, add knowledge. Your goodness, does it stop you from investigating? Because sometimes being good is all that you care about, and you don't want to investigate anymore. When if you're a very investigative person, are you taking self-control? Are you realizing that just because you have knowledge doesn't mean you have to share it with everybody? Or it doesn't mean that you have to be right all the time, right? Or you could pick perseverance. Great, you're a person that has stick-to-itiveness. Do you understand the difference between godliness, which is quitting when God tells you to quit, and moving on when God tells you to move on, and just straight perseverance? It doesn't matter where you go in this verse, you can find a place to camp, and then God says, but check this one out. Move a little bit more to here. And it'll keep you from being ineffective and unproductive. Those are big deals. They are in the corporate world, right? As an employee, if you are labeled ineffective and unproductive, I may suggest that your tenure may be short in whatever you've chosen to do, right? And God uses that language and says, I want you as my people to be effective and productive. And here's part of how you do that. All these character qualities. Why? Because character is the bottom line. So it reminds us of that. What are some ways that I can grow in a leader? Try new things. Mandy always comes up with interesting pictures. We've always done it that way. We got to be careful to not let that bully us. And one of the things that we're excited about in this restart of our church is that by keeping the same two pastors as before, we're calling Lloyd kind of retired now. Is that okay, Lloyd? We're sort of... But in keeping us, you've chosen to take two people who know they've made a lot of mistakes and have a good track record in both things that worked and didn't work. Right? And what have we learned from that? Not to do it simply the way you've done it before. Stretch ourselves. Bible study is another way in which we continue to grow, to learn as much as we can about His character, His values, His compassion, and ultimately to be open to positive criticism. Man, in every area of life, positive criticism is the worst. Don't you hate it when somebody says to you, you are just a wonderful human being, but we bathe in the first part. We hate the shoe dropping. But, and there is in all of us a natural defensiveness that instantly tightens up at what's going to come after the but. Sometimes the comments are good, sometimes the comments are not so good. And being able to discern which is a timely intervention by a person to remind you of something that you're doing or how you appear to be doing something, a gentle reminder that that's not so great, and at other times to have the discretion to say, I see their point of view, but I disagree. That's a hard one. Very hard. But we must never stop growing and at least be willing to talk about these things. Finally, developing and training other leaders. The things you've heard me say in the presence of many witnesses, and trust to reliable men, and I would say here that's being qualified as those who are going to teach others, but the New Testament has many instances where it's also women that are part of the leadership structure and need to grow. And so what is it that we can do to encourage growth? We used to send people to Bible college, seminary. I got bad news for you. Most Bible colleges have folded in North America, and seminaries are empty. Been saying this for 20 years. The reality is now hitting our churches that many of whom are finding they can't find new pastors. Or the situation now where most of the churches that are over about 300 are now hiring companies to headhunt pastors. So recently, four of our larger churches, I won't name them, in the Fraser Valley, and I'm going from Langley to Hope, just to keep it nice and big. All those four successful pastors were headhunted by groups. You pay anywhere from $50,000 to $120,000 is the headhunting fee. These companies then go out and figure out how to lure a pastor out of a church and stick him in another church. And that includes, and I'm not joking here, that includes memberships to golf courses, cars, extra benefits. And it sounds horrible when you say that, but what churches are saying is, we can't find young guys coming out of seminary. The training process for young leaders has completely inverted on its head. So young people are not leaving high school, going to Bible college, and the ones that we expected later in life to go into seminary, those are so few and far between. Three of our churches have been looking now for over 2 years to fill a pastoral. They refused to go the headhunting route. They've continued to pray, but they haven't found anybody. We have a crisis of leadership in both in Canada and in the States. And one of the only ways that churches are dealing with this is in-house training. And that means identifying leadership in young people, in people who are middle-aged, in seniors, finding out what God is doing in their lives, finding out if they have any interest in ministry, and then churches getting behind them, supporting them in something like online courses, right? Sending them to summer school, letting them do training while they're still able to maintain their jobs and do ministry in the church. That's becoming a growing thing as churches are scratching their heads and saying, how do we train leaders for the next 50 years? Because people are not taking the time or the money to do it the traditional way that we are always used to. So we have to find new ways to do things. It's no use hanging our heads and crying the blues about it. It's simply, God, how do we do this differently? We got to sort this out. We got to figure it out. We got to make it happen. And it's part of what we're doing as an association of churches as well, is trying to figure out how we can do that. Sometime in the next year, when things have calmed down a bit, I am hoping to let you see Jen from Green Bay Bible Camp. She's going to come up, and I'll have her talk to you about the incredible work that's being done through camp in terms of leadership and training. If you do have young people that are just 13 years of age coming into 14, 15, 16, 17, one of the things that we have done is change our focus and embrace camps, because for 3 months or 2 months and a couple of weeks, it's amazing what they're able to do with young people and start discipling and training them for future leadership. It's just one of the ways that I'm telling you, churches have had to rethink how to do this for the future. Developing and training other leaders. Because ultimately we got to let people rise to the level of their natural and their God-given leadership abilities. Let me conclude with this. Robert Morgan relates a story from the life of John Wooden. John Wooden is one of the most revered coaches ever in the history of college football, and he credited much of his success to his father. He recalled a boyhood occasion when he watched his father deal with a very strange situation. In Indiana, the county would pay local farmers to bring their teams of mules or horses to the gravel pits, and then they would haul out loads of gravel for scattering on roads and sidewalks and things like that wherever it was needed. And some of these gravel pits were much deeper than others, and sometimes it was hard for a team to pull a wagon filled with gravel out through the wet sand and up very steep inclines with horses or with mules. So one day, Wooden writes, a young farmer was trying to get his team of horses to pull a fully loaded wagon out of the pit. And he and his dad had stopped and watched as this young farmer, who was now very, very frustrated that he was bogged down, he was whipping and cursing his plow horses. They were frothing at the mouth, stomping, pulling back, pulling forward. It was a mess. The wagon just wasn't going anywhere, and he was stuck. And the elder Wooden, in other words, John Wooden's dad, he watched for a while, and then he stopped, and he got out, and he went over, and the young Wooden says he watched his dad talk to the farmer. The farmer got down out of his cart, and together his dad unhooked the teams of horses. They took them off to a watering trough. They watered the horses. He asked, there was always some oats in the back, so gave the horses a little bit of oats, brought them back. About half an hour had gone by. Calmed the horses down. Then his dad sort of took one of the horses after they'd put him back in the lead, sort of stroking them and whispering to them and all the rest of it. He held their bridles, and then he writes this. He continued to talk very calmly and gentle as they settled down. Gradually, they stepped out. He stepped out in front of them. He gave a little whistle to start them moving forward while he guided the reins from the front. Within moments, the two big plow horses pulled the wagon out of the gravel pit almost as easy as could be. It was as if they were happy to do it. And John Wooden writes, I've never forgotten what I saw him do and how he did it. Over the years, I've seen a lot of leaders act like that angry young farmer who lost control. So much more can usually be accomplished by Dad's calm, confident, and steady approach. And he finished this way in his book. He said, I took away an indelible lesson. It takes strength inside to be gentle on the outside. Those are great words that we try to remember as leaders. And as we continue to build and grow our church together, as you continue to trust your leaders, and as we trust and engage with you, we know that God will continue to do great things through us. Let's bow in a word of prayer. Father, thank you. Thank you for the relationship that exists in a church between those that are called to lead and those that empower them to lead and serve with them. Thank you for that very special relationship. Thank you for all the gifts and abilities that you bring to us as people join us, as we start to think and strategize what the future will look like and how we can engage in our community and continue to be a light for you and a light to each other. Bless us as we continue to navigate our way through this pandemic, as we continue to demonstrate love and kindness, as we continue to try and be unified in our actions so that our actions speak louder than our words and tell people that you will know we are Christians by our love. Father, bless us as we leave this place and as we continue to do what you've called us to do. We bless you in Jesus' name. Amen.